Thank you, and thank you all for coming. I was sitting across the table from my mother, and she asked me, do you like your hair that long? And I laughed, as you just did, and she looked a little hurt, and she said, why are you laughing? And I said, well, you know, I'm writing this book about mothers and daughters, so I talk to a lot of women about their mothers, and so many of them say their mothers criticize their hair. And she said, I wasn't criticizing. She said, I wasn't criticizing. And I said, okay, let it drop. A little bit later, middle of another conversation, I said, so Mom, what do you think of my hair? And you won't be surprised that she said, I think it's a little too long. People tell me that conversations with their mothers and their daughters are both the best and the worst of all possible conversations. Can you all hear me, by the way? Get this a little closer. Is that better? Okay. All right, how's that? Didn't do a sound check before. People tell me that their conversations with their mothers and their daughters are both the best and the worst of all possible conversations. The best because here's somebody that knows you so well, understands all the nuances of what you say, cares about you maybe almost as much as you care about yourself. So you tell all these details and they want to hear them. But why the worst? Because somehow with a mother and a daughter, one person says something that to somebody else would have no reaction at all, but suddenly your back is up and you're having an argument and you don't know where it came from. And sometimes you're having the same arguments over and over and wondering, how can we get out of this loop here? I try in this book to show both the mother's and the daughter's perspectives. I myself had a mother. I don't have daughters, don't have children. But I wanted a title that could be said either by a mother to a daughter or a daughter to a mother. And you're wearing that is said, I'm told, by daughters to mothers as well as mothers to daughters. But somehow it seems to have more resonance when it's the mother to the daughter. So when daughters, when mothers tell me, in fact, a woman who was running for Senate told me that just that day her daughter had said, you can't go out wearing those shoes, Mom. But she laughed. She thought it was funny. When daughters tell me that their mothers are critical of the big three, hair, clothes, and weight, sometimes it's funny and sometimes it's not. Sometimes they really start feeling, why does she care more about my appearance than anything else? I want to talk about the big three, but about a lot of other things too. The fact that I don't have daughters meant that I had to put a little extra effort into understanding the mother's point of view, whereas I understood the daughter's point of view in a kind of automatic way. And I think of it as parallel to the book about women and men. I'm a woman, I'm not a man, so I had to just put that extra effort into understanding the men's point of view and representing it fairly. Well, I might as well start with the big three because we are already there and you heard it in the introduction. A woman says to her daughter, your hair looks so beautiful when it's combed back. But she says it when her hair is not combed back. So it sounds like you're telling me it doesn't look good the way it is. I've heard comments like, I can count on my mother to notice when I gain a pound. And of course, the comments about clothes. Probably it shouldn't have been you're wearing that. It should have been, you're not going to wear that, are you? But that was a little long for the title, so I went for the shorter one. Sometimes it's the context. So, for example, and I heard so many funny stories, but a woman telling me, this is Washington, she was on television, it was a bill signing ceremony with the President of the United States, and she had been involved in preparing this bill, and so she was there on television, and she was so pleased, her mother got to see her, and the mother's comment was, you needed a haircut. One of the editors at the publishing company, her picture had been in the paper because she was promoted to a very high position, and her mother's comment, seeing her picture in the paper, was, I could see you didn't have time to cut your bangs. What the daughters hear from this is she doesn't care about the more important thing that I've done. She only cares about my appearance. And I really don't think it means that. I think in many cases, the mother feels, of course I'm proud of you, of course you've done a wonderful thing, but I can't help you there. That's not an area I know anything about. But your appearance I can help you with. And maybe these are things nobody else would tell you. And think of how often you have, in fact, looked at a woman and thought, you know, she would look a lot better if her hair were different, or she wore a different color, or she didn't wear those shoes. But we don't say it, fortunately. And so mothers often feel, I have to tell her because nobody else will. Oddly enough, even a compliment can have that effect. So a woman told me, again, in the spirit of complaint, that her mother said, you look gorgeous in that black suit. Now, why would that be something to complain about? Well, her mother had heard her lecture for the first time and said, you look gorgeous in that black suit, which she wanted to hear something about the content of what she had said. I really had to think a lot about why. Why is so much focused on appearance? Now, many of the things that I say about mothers and daughters are also true of mothers and sons, and fathers and sons, and fathers and daughters, but some of it is particular to the mother-daughter relationship, and the focus on appearance, I think, tends to be more between mothers and daughters. So if you think about why, first of all, women are judged more by appearance in our culture than men. That's just a fact of life. But also, if you think about the range from which we have to choose, and now I'm going to ask you to do something. There are enough men in the room, we could do this experiment, but sorry to put you all on the spot here. But look around the room and look at the range of hairstyles that you see among the men in the room. You might see somebody's bald, you know, it's worth commenting on, but the range is pretty narrow. Now look around the room at the range of hairstyles among the women. And I have done this in, as you know, thousands of people in the audience who did it at the Kennedy Center. I don't think we ever see two women with exactly the same hairstyle, whereas there often are men you could say, well, pretty much the same. The range from which women have to choose of hairstyle and clothing style is so vast that the chances that any other woman is going to think you made exactly the best choice are actually pretty slim. We could all be improved. And so I think that is part of the reason that it's kind of a setup. Go back to the conversation I told you about with my own mother, where she said, I wasn't criticizing, and I believe she did not think she was criticizing. She would say she was caring, and I believe she was showing her caring. And this is a way that the conversations between mothers and daughters are a setup, because caring and criticizing are accomplished in the same words. The caring is there and the criticizing is there. And the problem is that one sees only the caring and the other sees only the criticizing. And if each of us can acknowledge that the other part is also there, then we can kind of be on the road toward maybe making some progress here. The irony is, from the daughter's point of view, the person you most want to think you're perfect is the one most likely to see your flaws and tell you about them because she's looking so close up. We tend to look at our mothers and our daughters as reflections of ourselves. And we look for ourselves in the other. It's almost like a treasure hunt. You know, you see something that reminds you of yourself and your daughter, your mother. If it's something that you feel happy about, then you're really pleased. If it's something you don't feel so happy about, then you might feel less than pleased. If you're the mother and you seek a quality in your daughter that you don't like in yourself, you might feel guilty. It's your fault that she has this quality. And I think from the daughter's point of view, you know, the comment which we often hear, I sound just like my mother. Usually that is not said in celebration. When we hear ourselves saying things that our mother said that we like, oh, I sound just like my mother, we don't say it. We tend to say it when it's something that we're not all that thrilled about. So there's something about looking so close. It's almost like we look at each other through a magnifying glass. I'm going to give a couple of examples of how, where it sounds like it's critical, it really could be an effort to help. And after all, when you think about it, that's a mother's job throughout her entire life, isn't it, to be helpful, give advice, provide guidance. Here's an example where a mother felt she was clearly giving help and her daughter got angry, and we can try to figure out why. This is told to me by the mother. Her daughter was buying a condo for the first time, so first-time homeowner. The mother thought she would give her some pointers, things that she, you know, might not have thought about. And the daughter became annoyed. You know, I can, you know, Mom, I'm a grown-up. I can handle these things for myself. And then a few weeks later, the daughter was telling her mother how helpful a certain friend had been. It was exactly the same advice. And the mother's comment about it was, you know, first of all, why is this still happening when she's 35 years old? Okay, when she was a teenager, but why is it still happening? And also, doesn't it count when I say it? And my explanation is, it counts too much. What a mother says to a daughter carries so much weight that the implication that your mother might not think you can take care of yourself is a much more prominent message than the help that you're getting. Advice on mortgage you can get from anybody, but only your mother can give you that stamp of approval that you're okay. So it's not that she doesn't count, which is how I think both mothers and daughters, we tend to underestimate our own power and overestimate the other's power. I think adult daughters often don't realize how much they have now gained power. For example, they may have, if they're grandchildren, they may have the power of controlling access to the grandchildren, which the grandmothers may want a lot. And that's something I heard about a lot from mothers who are now grandmothers. I'm going to give you, so the power that the daughter has certainly increased. And being aware of that, I think mothers often don't realize how much power they still have. So I'll give you, again, a personal example. At this point, I was living in California. My parents were celebrating their 60th anniversary. When my mother passed away, they had just celebrated their 71st anniversary, so they were married a very long time. It was their 60th anniversary, and my two sisters and I were making an anniversary party for my parents. And I was in California, but I was a full participant in planning this, and I was going to fly back east to take part in it. But as it became closer, my mother kept asking me, have you bought a new dress? Now, I want to know how many people in this room think that an important event should be acknowledged by the purchase of a new dress. Nobody wants to admit to it. I asked this when I was speaking in New York City, and my sister was in the audience, and she raised her hand. I said, you? My mother felt that if it's an important occasion, you should get a new dress. And this was often a point of contention because I wasn't quite as interested in clothes as she was, and so she worried about that. And the closer it got, the more upset she was getting that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do in getting a new dress, and the more upset I was getting that she was trying to force me to do something that I didn't think made any sense. So I did what many women do. I discussed it with my friends. And I discussed how I was really getting at the end of my rope here. I had tried to buy a dress. I had gone to stores, and anything that I liked didn't fit, and the things that fit I didn't like, and I was running out of time, and I was too busy to spend all my time in stores. Now, you could ask, if I don't have time to shop, why do I have time to talk to my friends for hours on the phone? But that I could do after 10 o'clock at night, and stores are closed at 10 o'clock at night. So my friends reassured me, gave me courage, and then I was really, really reassured and comforted and determined that I was going to stand my ground and wear a perfectly good dress that I had that suited the occasion and was in good shape. And then I felt so much better. And then I went to one more store and I bought a new dress. And I had to admit that to my friends. That was embarrassing. Because my mother loomed like a giant, and I didn't want to disappoint her. And even though I thought the demand she was making didn't make sense, I still wanted that approval, wanted to please her. And I think that often is the case, that mothers loom like giants and often don't realize. And I'm sure my mother's frustration was that she was feeling powerless. She should have been able to get me to do it just by saying it once. Somebody told me this story as evidence of how her mother was critical that I thought was revealing. She and her husband had just bought a, this was in New York City, they had bought a condominium. And it was in a good neighborhood, and it was fairly expensive because she and her husband had good jobs and they were doing so well. And they showed it to her mother while the previous owner's furniture was still in it, because they felt her mother tended to be critical and they wanted it to really look good. So her mother looked around and she said, yes, this is really a great place. And then she pointed to the pictures on the wall and she said, they may have told you this is in move-in condition, but when they take those pictures off the wall, there's going to be holes. Now, the daughter told me this story in the spirit of, can you believe how she had to stretch for something to criticize? But I thought about it, and I think maybe she was stretching for a way to be helpful. Because here her daughter has bought a new house. She didn't need her mother to pick the house, didn't need her mother to help pay for it. And the most hurtful thing is to feel you're not needed anymore. So she was looking for some way that her superior experience might be of help. And so maybe that's something the daughter didn't think of that could be helpful. And I think that's some, you can sometimes think about it that way. She may not be stretching for something to pick on, but really be stretching for something where she could be helpful. I decided to write the book about mothers and daughters after seeing the reaction to the book I had written before, which was about family relationships. It was about all adult family relationships, and the book was called I Only Say This Because I Love You. And now when people heard that, they thought it was mothers, but it wasn't. It was all family relationships. But when I was interviewed about that book, people kept wanting to talk about mothers and daughters. That was the topic that people want to talk about the most. So I was talking to one journalist, and you know, like all the others, she was asking me about mothers and daughters, and she's kind of blurted out, what is it about mothers and daughters? You know, why is our relationship so fraught? And I thought for a second, and it really only took me a second, I hadn't thought about it, but as soon as I did, the answer was there. It's because we're both women. And so many of the things that create problems between mothers or daughters are things that are typical of women. Women's use of talk in relationships. Now, first thing, talk. We talk more. When I did the research on women and men way back, the book You Just Don't Understand, a line I used to often say, that for girls and women, talk is the glue that holds a relationship together. And this is found in the youngest kids, that the little girls are sitting and talking and the boys may be running around and doing things. So for the boys, your best friend is the one you do everything with or the one that will stick up for you in a fight. But for the girls, your best friend is the one you tell everything to. So mothers and daughters are talking more. Now, the more you talk and the more you talk about personal things, the more opportunity you have to say the wrong thing. And so that's part of the reason that we run into more trouble. Going back to the little girls again, when a little girl is mad at another little girl, she would say, you can't come to my birthday party. You didn't hear that among the boys. Being left out is the worst punishment that girls can visit on each other. You've probably heard that girls are cliquey. Well, they are. Because if you're telling your secrets to your friends, you can't let a stranger in. You can't let somebody be there who's not your friend because they can't not supposed to hear your secrets. If you're playing baseball, you can have a kid there you don't like. You may treat him badly, you may give him the worst position, but he can be there. But if you're telling secrets, someone who's not a friend can't be there. And so girls are constantly reshifting their alignments and locking out girls that used to be their friends. And so girls and women are very attuned to any indication that they're being left out. And this is something that I heard over and over, especially from mothers, but also from daughters. But when the daughter is grown, when you think of it, when the daughter's small, the mother is the center of her life. She knows everything, at least she has a right to know everything, and can decide where the daughter goes and whether she needs to be there. When the daughter's an adult, there are many, many things going on in her life that the mother is not part of. And when I heard from mothers about what hurt them and upset them about their grown daughters, it was often not being included in things and not being told things. So if you think of a situation, and this is an example that did happen, but it happens in many forms, it came out that an adult daughter had not told her parents something, and the father just wasn't all that upset. You know, well, she told us when she was ready. I kept secrets from my parents, too. And the mother just could not get past it. I thought she trusted me more. I thought we were closer than that. If she told me, I could have helped her. So the importance, the meaning of being told things is just much weightier for women. And that explains a lot of the, you know, what goes on between mothers and daughters that makes that relationship so fraught. I expected, when I went into this, I expected to hear from mothers and daughters that they were close or distant, and that was true. You know, I very often heard, we're close, we're not close, I wish we were closer, I'm closer to my, actually I very often heard, I'm closer to my daughter than I was to my own mother, the positive thing, and that was very encouraging. But I was surprised by how much I heard talk about sameness, almost immediately. We're the same or we're different. And it could be we're close because we're the same, and it could be we fight because we're the same. It's like the two same poles of a magnet, one woman said. It could be we're close because we're different and we complement each other. It could be we're, we fight because, anyway, it could be fighting and not fighting and or whichever, but it was often explained in terms of closeness, in terms of sameness and difference. And that surprised me. And I realized that this issue, are we the same, is another thing that is much more common among girls than you hear among boys. There was a little study I once did of kids at play, and there were two little boys, and they were talking. It was kind of a typical conversation for boys, who can hit a ball higher? You know, mine's up to there, mine's up to the sky, mine's up to heaven, mine's up to God. But what were the girls doing? The girls were talking about whether they're the same. So one girl said, did you know my babysitter called Amber has already contacts? Wears contact lenses. And the second girl said, my mom has already contacts and my dad does too. And using the same phrasing, because many girls will feel if you say something a little bit differently, you're criticizing, you're correcting her. You know, if your friend says either, you don't want to say either because it'll sound like you're correcting her pronunciation. So this obsession with whether you're the same or not is something that particularly I found particularly among girls and women. And tendency to use indirectness was more common among girls and women. So frequently, women complained that their mothers were indirect, but I think the reason they minded the indirectness is that they felt that it was indirectly a complaint. So to give you an example of that, a woman, her mother had been visiting, and then she was taking her to the airport. And as they were getting in the car, her mother was kind of disgruntled, and she said, I had to carry my own suitcase to the car. And the daughter said, well, why didn't you tell me? You know, I would have been happy to carry it. And the mother said, well, you must have heard me coming down the stairs. And the daughter found, why doesn't she just tell me what she wants so that I can do it? And I think the problem was less that her mother didn't tell her directly what she wanted, is that she was disappointed, you know, that she wasn't able to do it. If she had succeeded in doing it, that's something that has very high value. It's, again, something I talked about a lot in the book about women and men. There's a payoff sometimes in getting what you want without asking for it. If you ask for it, anybody could give it to you. But if somebody who's close to you knows what you want without your asking for it, then that, you know, what you want is for them to know without being told. So that does, and I don't, and we can think of it as manipulative. I tend to think of manipulative as a word we use to describe a style that we don't like. When it works well. To conclude then, I'll say a few things about what we can do, but I want to say first, just end up with a story. Contrasting, and these come from students of mine, contrasting their mother's and their father's styles. And in one case, the student preferred the mother's style, and in another case, she preferred the father's style. I'll start with the one where she preferred the father's style. She had broken up with her boyfriend, and she really felt bad about it. And so she was wanting to get everybody's opinions, and so she told her father about it, and he gave her some perspective, and then He never brought it up again. And then she told her mother about it, and her mother gave her perspective. And then every time she talked to her, she said, "How are you doing? Have you heard from him? Have you met anybody interesting? Has he met anybody interesting?" Finally, the daughter had to say to her mother, "Please stop bringing it up, you're making it harder." And then the mother was hurt, and the daughter didn't want to hurt her mother's feelings. So, and then she thought, "Now I know why I prefer to discuss these things with my friends rather than my mother." Now, that's often a challenge we all have to do every day, right? Somebody has something bad happen. If you mention it so they know you care, you're potentially making them feel bad because you're reminding them of it. And so you always have to make that decision. But the mother, in this case, was showing caring, and the daughter felt it was too much. Here's an example of another student who preferred her mother's style in this case. She had the flu, and she called home, and her mother wasn't home, so she talked to her father. And she said, "Oh, Daddy, I feel so sick, and everything hurts, and I have a headache and a high fever." And her father said, "Take Tylenol." And she said, "Well, I did, but it didn't help. I still feel sick. Everything still hurts." And her father said, "Well, make an appointment to go see the doctor." And she said, "I tried, but everybody has the flu, and I couldn't get an appointment." And he said, "Well, I can't help you then." And this student commented that she realized what she would have preferred if she'd talked to her mother. "Oh, you poor thing, I'm so sorry. I wish I were there to make you a cup of tea. I'll call back later and see how you're feeling." So that's a case in which that kind of, I sometimes call it rapport talk, is something she would have valued. So you don't always know in which context you're going to value it and which you're not, but that was a case in which she actually preferred her mother's style. There's lots more to say, but anyway, I don't want to use up all the time. I want to give you time for questions. So to just sum up, what can we do about this? Some of it is built into the relationship, and it's never going to be completely free sailing. And it's like anyone you're close to. You know, you love each other, you appreciate each other, and sometimes you get on each other's nerves. But when it comes to the caring and criticizing, I do have to say that the mothers and daughters who told me they had who spoke most favorably and effusively about their relationship, the mothers said that they bite their tongue. And one woman said, "I'm biting my tongue so much it's bleeding." It is not easy, especially if you see your daughter doing something. And I think often the feeling is kind of, it makes you crazy because it's so obvious what she should do and you can't get her to do it. But it seems that biting your tongue really, unless you, it's a life and death or health situation, may be help there. There are other things you can say. You can offer praise. You can express confidence, which often we don't think of because we think it just is self-evident. Humor. When somebody does something that gets on your nerves, you can sort of remind yourself, rather than, "Oh, you're doing that again," snapping, make some kind of a joke. It's best if you agree on what that joke might be. Email. One woman said she had a tendency to give too much directions, and one time her daughter wanted a recipe, and she gave her the recipe. And then she kept going, you know, all the details, how she should do it. And the daughter said, "I think I can handle it from here myself." And then whenever she feels her mother is being too directive, she'll say, "Remember the fruitcake." So they both laugh because it's something that they agree that they can refer to. And sometimes it's just a matter of reframing. And I want to end with this anecdote. A woman told me, wrote to me and told me how helpful reading my take on this had been. She said, "Thank you so much. For the first time, I had a visit home with my mother, and there were no fights. Thank you." And I said, "I'm really happy, but what happened? You know, how did it work?" So she gave me this example. She had bought a new purchase, which she showed her mother, two new pairs of socks, one black and one navy. And then the next day, she was wearing a pair of socks and showed her mother how nice they looked. And her mother said, "They look so nice." And then she said, "Are you sure you're not wearing one of each color?" And the daughter told me, in the past, she said, that's just the sort of thing that would have set her off. "I've got a master's degree, and you don't think I can match my socks?" And then she stopped for a second and she reframed and she thought, you know, who else is going to care about the color of my socks? And then she wasn't angry anymore, and instead she felt tender and touched. And I think that that is something, you know, because the caring and the criticizing are both there, you can look at one, at the other instead of the one that comes naturally. And when you think about it, it's not so off the wall. Who among us has never mistaken navy for black? We've all done that. And I'm sure if you asked her mother, do you really think she's wearing mismatched socks? She'd probably say no. But I think maybe it was something she could say to offer help, to show she's paying attention and maybe be helpful. And so I said that was the last anecdote. I have actually one last anecdote. Even if your mother doesn't stop saying what she's saying, you can still feel differently about it. A woman told me that she had gotten a call that her mother was in the hospital and she was really worried and, you know, flew to that city and came into the hospital room and she had, you know, they give you that oxygen, which looks worse than it is. And so she came up to the bed and she leaned over to give her mother a kiss and her mother said, "When's the last time you did your roots?" And she said she was so happy. It meant that her mother was okay. So I'll end on that note. Thank you.